Well, so I am back from Seattle, having been gone this week, and many of you have asked. It was a productive trip. I wouldn't regard it as the most enjoyable I've ever taken, but, you know, wah, wah, wah. You know, I guess I can't complain too much, and I'm not going to. So I'm back, and it remains a little too much driving. So I'm still buzzing a little for many hours in the car. So I'd like to talk about actually a fairly minor phrase in this lesson we've had from 1 Peter, but it's a phrase that caught my ear, or caught my mind, or caught my heart. It's what leapt out at me as I was reading these texts, and the text is simply having purified yourself by obedience to the truth. Purified your souls by obedience to the truth. And what I'd like to talk about is what it might mean to be obedient to the truth. And suggest that as a fairly central practice in our everyday spiritual life. And truth itself, there can be, sort of truths that we put forth as central to our faith. One of the kind of central truths for me would be, say, nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God made known in Christ Jesus our Lord. And it has this dual aspect. It is both, I am always and infinitely loved by God. Nothing can separate me from that. But also that there's nothing in any circumstance that can prevent me from approaching that circumstance with love. Nothing can separate me in that sense either. And that's a truth. But I do love the etymology of the Greek word truth and the heart of it. The Greek word is aletheia. And the heart of it is lethe, which is the river of forgetfulness in the Greek underworld. You cross it, and then your memory of life in the sunshine vanishes, and you enter a state of forgetfulness. And the Greek word for truth simply puts an ah in front of that to cancel it. So the Greek word for truth is to stop forgetting. And to stop forgetting those, who has not spent significant amounts of time preoccupied and in many ways oblivious I sometimes point to how much driving I do and how sometimes I will sort of be aware that I'm at Springdale and then I'm at Mission Creek, but I don't quite remember how I got there because I was thinking about something else. That's not so bad when you're driving, I guess. I don't want my life to be like that. I was at Springdale, 27 years ago, and now I'm here, and how did I get here? Because I wasn't paying attention, or I was forgetful. And so not forgetting where you are and who you are, and that not forgetting is a profound sort of thing to remember. Remember, if you can do that, if you don't forget. But then this word obedience, I think, is one that is maybe a little trickier for us. A lot of people have quite a bit of resistance to this notion of obedience, and almost always we think of it in terms of obedience to some external authority. I made reference down at St. John's this morning about how we obey speed limits. Although here in Montana, we didn't used to have speed limits. It was up to us to decide what was safe and prudent. Apparently that wasn't working out so well. There were government prohibitions against people thinking for themselves, so that came to an end. But just parenthetically, notice that Montana was actually acting, I think, in the spirit of Jesus when they said, decide for yourselves what is safe and prudent. Make responsible decisions, but the decision-making power remains with you. And I think that's where Jesus always wanted it to be. He wanted to put us in touch and help us awaken to to that very those faculties within ourselves that allow us to make such an assessment as, how fast should I drive? Do I need to slow down? And, of course, many other more significant aspects of our lives. But, obedience, you know, it's the root of obedience, the word itself, comes from to hear. And so, once you're hearing something, how do you respond to it? And that, I think, is closest to the real spiritual significance of obedience. Not that you are supposed to obey and or comply with the demands of some external authority, but you are to listen to what is going on in your own heart. And again, that's what Jesus so consistently pointed us toward, our own hearts. And he says, you have to pay attention to what's going on there, going on within yourself. How do you read the situation? You know, the guys that walked by the beaten and robbed traveler, they were making an assessment of that situation. And Jesus said they were basing that on, I think, bad religion that made them more worried about purity and ritual defilement than helping a fellow human being. But, you know, their hearts were hardened as they walked by that man. And Jesus would say, look at it. There's a guy in trouble. Don't you want to be a neighbor to him? Don't you want to be a neighbor to him? But you have to pay attention to what's going on in your own heart to do that. And I put it down as a little law that I hope I follow somewhat. When you know what is right, do what is right. It seems simple, but amazing are the ways that we turn away from so simple a thing as that. And we often also get discouraged because we know so little of what we think the truth is, or we don't know enough of what we think we need to know. But be faithful to whatever it is that you do know. Even if it's only a little bit, even if it's only the smallest incremental movement toward something that is kinder, more compassionate, more hopeful, something that would put into practice those many sort of the prayer of St. Francis. Even if you know just a little bit of how that might, how you might proceed in a given situation, put that into practice. It will grow. If your grasp of the truth is as of a mustard seed, that's enough. It'll grow. But the world would be transformed utterly if all of us were faithful to what it is we know where we are right now. And if we were faithful to that, we would know more tomorrow. And wisdom would unfold in front of us. You know, so be it. I also want to talk about this road to Emmaus, because I think the road to Emmaus story has at least some features that are pretty typical of our everyday life. I was going to make a joke and say, except that it has the risen Christ walking alongside, and that may be atypical. And that would have been a joke, except the point of what I'm about to say is that the risen Christ is walking with us. Just like in the story, we don't recognize it. But these guys are walking along, and they're discouraged. They thought they had understood a situation. They were hopeful. They said, Jesus of Nazareth, he was powerful, he was great, but it's come to nothing. It's a dead end. He's dead, except that there are crazy stories circulating. But wow, we had put all our hopes in this Jesus fellow, and we are sad and disappointed. And I think of how often I interpret my own life to myself. I tell a story about my life and what's happening, or what happened. And oftentimes I notice that I don't tell a very hopeful story. The story that I tell sometimes paints me into a corner of discouragement or disappointment or despair. And I don't know where to go from that. And that's, I think, what these two were doing. They were telling telling themselves a story that was from a very limited perspective. And then the presence between them, spoken of in the story as yet another instance of the risen Christ being unrecognized as a presence that accompanied them. And that's, I would of course like to put that before us. We may be walking always on the road to Emmaus, and we may confront fairly significant disappointment or discouragement. And I would say the risen Christ, which is the presence of God, walks along with us. The trick, as occurred in the story, is how to open our hearts to a larger perspective. Basically, what is the Christ perspective in this situation? How can I go through this? How can I walk through this, illuminated by the love of Christ? And where our hearts begin to open to that possibility and the practice of Christ's love and Christ's compassion. My money is on the certainty that situation will begin to open up. And just as their hearts burned within them, new possibilities will begin to suggest themselves. You won't stay stuck forever in your disappointment and your discouragement. And I don't mean to make those things sound trivial. I mean, we face life-threatening illnesses. We face calamities in our lives. We face things that really incline us to say, I can't go on. I can't accept this. I can't say yes to this. And the perspective of the Christ who dwells in our hearts and who accompanies us down every road will open for us a way to accept, not wearily, but with power, our own lives, and will show us what our own lives look like through the eyes of love. That's the promise of being accompanied by the risen Christ, that we will see and be set free, as Jesus says of the truth. We will see and be set free by the undiscovered or unnoticed possibilities of love in this situation. And then finally, I just want us to notice that this is at least a very explicit tip of the hat to the worshiping practice of the early church. When you hear this figure, this unrecognized figure of Jesus, taking bread, blessing it, breaking it, and giving it, what does that sound like? I mean, that is the Eucharistic liturgy of the early church. And I want not to ignore that that's not an insignificant part of the story. And I want us to accept with gratitude what a gift it is to be able to gather here on a Sunday morning and to be reminded of God's willingness and pleasure at nourishing us, and to be reminded in the symbols of the Eucharist that though we are many, we are all deeply united at the very heart of reality. There is one God who creates all things. And though we are many and different and we're not all close friends and such, nonetheless, we can see, even in the diversity of our small congregation here, something that will teach us about the world. Every human being on the planet is our brother and sister. And every time we eat that broken bread and remember that God is nourishing all of creation in the way that this sacramental sign nourishes me in this moment, then we'll remember that brothers and sisters all. And let us thank God that we have been invited into something that will open the eyes of our hearts to a truth that will guide us on our way and open us to the abundant life that Jesus calls us to.